This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to my guests about the joys of sobriety, the benefits they've experienced. We talk a little bit about how they got sober, how long they've been sober, but we also talk about why they enjoy staying sober. And today's episode features Sam. Now, on my conversation with Sam, she is a woman after my own heart. I love her turn of phrase. I love her attitude towards sobriety, and you can't help be inspired by her. So thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so chuffed to have you on the podcast. Tell me, how long have you been sober?
Okay, so I actually looked this up on my app because we were doing this today, and I'm actually 416 days today, which is just wild, really. Like, I find it...
Did you ever imagine kind of
getting... No, not at all. It was weird, actually, because there was part of me that I think always knew that I would just have to stop drinking at some point in my life. So I've always said that I spent quite a long time in a weird headspace because I was constantly trying to do something that I thought I could never do, and that was stopping drinking. So I have called myself, I was a serial day one-er. So I was always coming back to day one. And I there was a part of me that never thought I would be able to stop drinking, but I never gave up trying to stop either. So I did know in there somewhere that I was going to do it one day. But I think that's alcohol, isn't it? That's what alcohol does to you. It puts you in that position of making it feel impossible to live your life without it. But I was really desperate to, and I knew at some point I would crack it, and I never stopped trying to give up. And that was sometimes it was I would say I was never drink again, and then I'd be drinking again on the weekend, and then at other times I would say I would never drink again, and I would have 4 months where I didn't drink, and then I would come back to it. But I was always back to that day one. So, you know, I'm almost in that slight parallel reality of I can't believe I'm here and I did it. But at the same time, I think I did know I would get here. Does that make any sense? I mean, it feels like it makes no sense.
No, that makes absolutely perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. And how long was it that you would say you were the serial day one-er? How many years or months did that span?
It was year. It was honestly years. And so I have always, or I was, I should say, a binge drinker. So I didn't drink daily, you know, even when I was, you know, before I was a mum and I was, you know, out partying quite heavily, it wasn't ever drinking daily, but, you know, it was sometimes a couple of times a week, but I always drank to excess. More often than not, I drank to excess, but I was also stuck in that little bit of grey area drinking because sometimes when I needed to, I could moderate, you know, and I also would go through long periods of time where I didn't drink. And, you know, and so that kind of made it, that brought its own challenges of trying to give up, because even in the last kind of couple of years where my kind of bouts of sobriety in between binges, they would get longer and longer, the drinking brain would kind of say to me, well, look, if you only do this twice a year, like what does it matter?
Right. It's like, you know, we're playing mind games with ourselves, isn't it?
Yeah, it's exhausting. It's just so exhausting. There was always an inner monologue about alcohol. And I heard something very recently, actually, that somebody who drank a little bit like me, a binge drinker, said that they used to drink just to quieten the drinking voice, which is just mad, you know, because that was a way of stopping the moderation chat that was just that goes on and on in your head when you are trying to moderate, when you know you can't moderate. But I would say that kind of seriously, And I drank a lot since 2020, but it would have been 2020. So I did in lockdown, I did 100 days, and that was my longest stint ever, aside from being pregnant. So I think that really started the wheels in motion for me. And then also in 2020, I feel like maybe it's just because I arrived at the right place in 2020 that there seemed to be so much more support for sobriety online. And that I feel that lockdown brought a lot of that up and out into the open, away from just AA, which honestly, for a while, I felt like was the only thing that was available and accessible to me when I was seeking to look for support to kind of stop drinking, which I actually did for the first time when I was 27.
Oh, really?
So I knew then that my drinking was unhealthy, but it was a very different time of my life. I was in my late 20s. I had a job in media, or, all me and my friends were about was out, restaurants, holidays. And actually, I could kind of kid myself that, it was okay. I just knew I always took it further than other people. But pre-2020, I really felt like there was AA, or you would go and speak to a doctor, and maybe a few other things, of none of which worked for me. So kind of in 2020, I would say like the sobriety world opened up, and I just started connecting with loads of other people that actually drank like I did. And that was really important for me, because not being a daily drinker, not being somebody that drank in the morning, not being that person, a lot of the time my drinking looked acceptable. And that was confusing, because I would think, that I've this is an issue for me, but my whole life revolved around it. And when I started meeting other people that were describing exactly how I was drinking, or my relationship with alcohol opened it all up, that actually I had support and I didn't feel so alone. It started to help some of those kind of shameful feelings that go hand in hand with drinking. So I w really wish, I would love to know how many actual day ones I've had.
It's like we gaslight ourselves, though, isn't it? It's like,
Massively.
are we okay? I used to compare myself. Did you do that with other people and just go, well, I'm not drinking as much as them, so I must be okay.
Yeah, and I think as well that for a while, a lot of my friendships, we were all doing the same thing. Like it, I was born in the 80s, I grew up in the 90s. It was just pub cult, like constant pub culture, and all my socializing revolved around it. And then also it becomes quite sneaky. So like, it would be that, my friends and I would go out, and they would go home, and maybe I would go home and have a bit more. But I was just having some more in my kitchen by myself, and was that, and the next day I think, oh, well, that's probably, is that weird or not? Well, loads of people just go home and have another glass of wine. And then you would go into the office and you would hear stories from people that had worse, maybe behaved worse than me. And honestly, I used to love hearing those, because I used to think, oh, maybe I'm not that bad. But, I knew deep down that my drinking was unhealthy and unsafe, really. But it just took a long time, and so many things I've had to do to unpick why I was drinking in the first place, remove myself from everything that's been ingrained in me since I was, in my teens, around alcohol, our culture around alcohol.
One of the things that I really realise is that we normalise heavy drinking. So we don't just glamorise it, we normalise it. And I think our age group, I'm a bit older than you, we definitely went through the period of wine bars, mummy wine culture, Ladette,
Bridget Jones.
Bridget Jones. I mean, oh, she was a heroine of mine, still is.
Totally. And we did glamorize that. We were all, I mean, we were still of a generation that you could smoke in pubs, and like that kind of came in, that ban came in kind of, I think I was in my mid-20s. Like, it was, everything revolved around the pub. It was just the fabric, really, of my upbringing, and also, my social life, really up until my 40s. And I think that genuinely is now actually because of age, because me and my friends are having families, and you know, we are doing other things, you know, jobs are becoming, you know, more stressful. Life requires more of us. And also now we're starting to understand health, and and we're really starting to respect, you know, that a lot more. And I look at my daughter's six, and I know that she will grow up outside of that sort of culture. Like, it's already changing massively. But I think, you know, if you are in your 40s, you know, I don't think it is uncommon to have an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. The thing that really winds me up is that we blame the person, we don't blame alcohol. And that is something that I get very frustrated with, because, you know, we are directly told to drink it. It's marketed to us. You know, the government is, you know, is really works alongside all the big alcohol companies. And yeah, anybody that then and has an unhealthy relationship with it, they're blamed. It's their fault. And we're told to like not abuse alcohol. And I always, when people say that now, I always say, can you just define what abusing it means? Because do you mean like definitely just drink under the 14 units that's recommended? Is that not abusing it? But, you know, I think that you could argue that if you drank some alcohol on the day that you were very stressed, is that you could be seen as abusing it, because it will directly change how you're feeling, and that in itself can lead to feeling dependent on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's when you're drinking for a reason. Brilliant. That's a brilliant comeback. Define abusing it. I mean, are you drinking for a reason? Are you drinking to get drunk? Or are you drinking and telling yourself you like the taste? There's so many different reasons why people drink.
And I feel like it's okay to, you know, I don't want to, you have to be careful really, because I don't judge anybody for drinking, enjoying drinking. I don't judge anybody for using it to soothe, because actually it can really work. And you're given it as a tool to live life, to relax, to party, to, you know, to make yourself feel better. That's how it's marketed to people. But I had reasons why I reached to alcohol. It was absolutely a self-soother for me, and probably worked very, very well actually in my late teens and my 20s. Also, this generation, you know, therapy wasn't a thing growing up in our home. Like, we just did not know that. In fact, we just swept everything under the rug. That's what we did. And so, like, you know, I think I've had to really, you know, I had to dig deep and do a lot of work on myself as well. And if I hadn't done that work, I genuinely don't think I'd be, you know, 416 days today. So there's a lot of effort that I think you have to put into if you are really drinking to a point where you are doing it and you don't want to be doing it, but you can't stop doing it. You know, there's lots of things that I think you kind of need to lean into to be able to kind of break free of it, basically. And that is definitely how I feel. Feel like I've broken free. I mean, I'm sounding like the most cliche thing. Like, sometimes I feel like, you know, skipping around and just being like shouting, like, I'm free of it, I'm free of it, because it is so freeing when you finally manage to get to a place where you're not needing to use alcohol for whatever reason in your life. It's like it genuinely is life-changing.
So what was it that shifted for you then? What do you think was the difference between the day ones and when you actually then sobriety stuck?
Well, I think every single day one counted. I think, like, you know, and actually when you kind of wake up on day one, you know, especially if you've had a little bit of time being alcohol free under your belt, you know, you end up, you know, drinking again. You wake up and you think, oh, it's all wasted. Like, you know, that 2 months, that 1 week, you know, however long, like, it has been pointless. And, you know, it absolutely hasn't. There's no way that I would be here today without every single time I got up and I tried again. And also, every single day that you decide not to drink also counts. So it doesn't matter if they are in succession or not. But I feel like for me, you know, it was almost like every weekend that I didn't end up having a drink, or every time I chose a soft drink instead of an alcoholic drink, that is a win. That's always a win. And we tend to just see the big numbers or the longevity as a win. And I, you know, every single time that I went to a social occasion without it, you know, like did things that I would normally have a drink at, like I didn't, that it just all counted. So I genuinely think that like all those years leading up, it, my story isn't that I woke up one day at an absolute rock bottom and just decided never to drink again, and that was that. For me, it was a lot more of a roller coaster than that. And I didn't have a horrendous rock bottom my last day of drinking. In fact, I've had some much, much darker experiences from drinking that just kept me drinking, to be honest. And so I think this complete rock bottom, you know, is, it happens for some people, but doesn't happen for everybody. And actually, for me, it was a casual lunch with friends that I was, you know, I was going to, and I was meant to, you know, just go there for a few hours. And I ended up over drinking and really, you know, couldn't quite remember getting home. And I woke up the next day and I just thought, this is enough, like enough. Like I gained nothing from it. And I think I finally tipped that balance of realizing that it was bringing me nothing apart from, you know, it destroyed my mental health for a week. That last time I drank. And like I said, I've had way bigger drinking sessions than that. I knew that the way I drank that day was unsafe. It was a real moment. I think what had happened was it was in January last year, and over Christmas I'd been able to moderate successfully. And that's sneaky. And that's another thing about grey area drinking, is that, you know, all of a sudden you'll have one or two and your brain will go, look, it's fine now. You're absolutely fine. And I always say that, like, over Christmas, I kind of let alcohol like stick its like foot in the door. And then in January, it just booted the door down. And I just like was only going to have two glasses. And, you know, hours later, like I ended up in a blackout traveling across London. And so, like, the next day, I cannot really explain anything. Then I woke up and I knew like there was a shift. And because by this point, I'd done so much work, like I had. Did sober challenge groups. I had a group of sober friends. I was meeting people on sober Instagram. I've been listening to your meditations. I had been really working at it. And then also, I had been to a sober wedding. I had done a holiday sober. And some of those I'd white knuckled a little bit or whatever. But ultimately, I got to that point, and that work had helped me. And I had a mindset shift also, because usually I would always wake up on the day one and I would be hating myself. You're useless. Why are you doing this? Like the self-loathing would honestly, like the way I thought about myself was just, that was rock bottom. And that was really sad. And I realize now that's just another way of alcohol keeping you in the cycle. And I woke up that time and I said to myself, this is going to be the best thing that's ever happened to me. And I've never said that to myself on a day one ever. I was always moping, you know, really like sometimes like really almost welcoming it, you know, on the sofa, like canceling work, like can't do anything, because also my hangovers by the end, oh my God, they're absolutely like crippling me. And yeah, I woke up and I was like, this, I'm just gonna make this the best thing that's ever happened to me, and I'm never gonna feel like that ever again. And I remember saying to my husband, like, I know you're not going to believe me because I don't know how many times I've said this over the years, but this is it. And that was it.
I think that's the biggest difference, isn't it? It's that mindset shift. And for me, the mindset shift was, I'm doing it, not I want to do it. I hope I can do it. It was, I'm doing it. I don't care how tough it is. I don't care how much I need to sulk. I don't care how miserable I get. I'm doing this and I'm getting out the other side of it. And actually, the minute I decided that, I didn't sulk. I felt good. I felt empowered.
Totally. Because it takes, you know, I work with well, in my work, I should say, you know, I always talk about language and saying, like, I don't want people to be saying, I hope to, you know, I hope to be doing this, or I might be able to do this. You know, it's not, I remember somebody saying to me, just say you're sober, like you're a sober person. You know, like just say you're a sober person. Again, it's like changing the pathways in your brain that alcohol has spent, you know, for me, like 30 years. Like, alcohol's been in my life for 30 years, which just one makes me feel really old, but also makes me feel a bit sad. But in the same sense, I think, well, it's not going to be in my life for the next 30. So it's going to be over half my life. It's not going to be a prominent fixture. But that mindset shift, you know, it took work. Like, it wasn't that I just woke up and went, oh yeah, I've changed my mindset now. It was everything. You know, I read every book. Like, I've read them all. I soaked it all up. And even when I went back to day one, I carried on going. I just thought, okay, I'm going to listen to another sober podcast now. And I really threw myself into it, and it paid off. And I used to see people, especially on social media, saying, one day it will just stick. And I used to think, like, probably on my, you know, maybe my more frustrated days, I think, like, as if, like, it's ne like, as if that's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. And then, you know, it sticks. And then you go, ah,
It does.
yeah. And then you just start telling everyone, it will
Yeah.
stick. Just don't give up.
Just
That's
keep
all.
going. It won't
Yeah.
stick if you give up.
Exactly. And I've got this little mantra now, because you know, you chat to lots of people on social media. It's amazing. I get, you know, a few people kind of messaging me, and I always just say, you only actually fail when you stop trying.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't give up, just keep going. And even if you're getting more sober days under your belt, that is making a huge difference, because you are moving forward. And we put this immense pressure, I think, on ourselves to do sobriety in a certain way. And that's, you know, that's another kind of societal thing that we have. And I just, you know, it's the AA phrase, and it's bring it back to the day. Like, what can you just do that day? And the days, they end up just stacking up, you know.
They do, but also you're sober from day one. The minute you decide, I like that. The minute you
Yes.
decide you're sober, just say you're sober, tell yourself you're sober.
Yeah.
And I think one of the mistakes I was making was thinking, well, when I've got this length of time under my
Yeah,
belt,
yeah,
that's when
yeah,
I'll feel
yeah.
sober.
Yeah.
Then you kind of get, I remember thinking about a year. Once I get to a year, I'll know I've done it.
You're doing it. It's happening.
Yeah. You are doing it. You are, you know, enjoy every day, enjoy every morning, wake up and really pat yourself on the back.
Yeah. Absolutely, because it's not easy. It's really not easy. And I think one of the biggest things as well is, like, you know, having to just not dull yourself and feel everything, I think, is one of the reasons, you know, a lot of people find it really hard to not drink, because it's really difficult. And once you actually start experiencing life in that way, not immediately, I think this is important, it can take time for some people, but once you start to experience life in that way, then you can feel very powerful, actually. Like, you can feel very powerful about how you're kind of living your life, because, you know, to not have anything dulled, you know, can be really raw and really challenging. But then on the flip side of that, you just feel things to such an immense kind of level, in a positive sense as well. It's just a really lovely kind of way to live.
And alcohol is dulling, like it might be dulling some of those emotions that we don't want to feel, but it's also dulling and removing some of the joy. It's pretending to be joy, but
Yeah,
it's not.
totally.
And then actually, and it does that bit takes time, doesn't it, to return? I mean, it's not like you're suddenly leaping about with joy.
No. And I talk about this quite a lot, because I think this is important, because in a weird way, I do think it was a good excuse for me to always kind of go back to drinking, because I would read a lot of people that would give up alcohol and very quickly, you know, look different, feel different, you know, lose a lot of weight, be super motivated. So I see people that are like, you know, I've given up alcohol, I've started, you know, running, like, straight, like, but all kind of quite immediate. And also, I think that quite a lot of people that drink alcohol are quite like, we're instant gratification type people, like, right? We like things to happen
Yeah,
now.
we are.
That's why you reach for a drink and very quickly you can feel good. So, like, I always say, I'm not a very patient person, and actually, you know, giving up alcohol, it was a patient process. And for me, I would, you know, the longest stint I had was 4 months. And even at 4 months, there were some very obvious benefits. You know, my bank account benefited, you know, like, my sleep benefited, like, there was things like that. But I didn't feel this shift. And so I would end up going back. And then I hit month five. It was definitely my pink cloud. Like, if you're kind of aware of the term of the pink cloud, that my pink cloud arrived. And I just felt on cloud nine for, and I was like, this is what everybody talks about. You know, this joy of just waking up and feeling really happy to be awake and all this stuff, you know, it sounds so silly and it, but just the kind of the moments of being outside and just standing there and like feeling a bit of sun on your face and just being like, wow, this, it's like you experience the world through a different lens. And it actually, it's the real lens, you know, but it took me time. And you know, I think it's really good to know that as well. And then I, about month eight, nine, I plateaued a bit because I was like, you can't just carry on, you know. And also lots of things like life things were happening in that time. And I was a bit like, oh, is this it? You know, because not gonna have these kind of like big, kind of exciting, like I was kind of trying to figure out because everything feels very constant, which is actually lovely. And I realized actually, no, this is it. And this is absolutely brilliant. Especially when like the opposite to that is just chaotic, which a lot of my drinking life was. And I would never want to go back to that now, you know, in a million years. But yeah, I think it's just so good to know that it will come.
And it
Like,
does take time. I mean, do you know the amount of conversations I have with people when they talk about the fact that because I lost 49 pounds. That didn't happen overnight. And when I was talking to somebody the other day, I said, look, I haven't actually got the data because I didn't want to focus on it. All I know is that over the first sort of 18 months, that happened. But if you divide out and think of it, like I was losing 2 pounds a month on average. And that's quite slow and steady. It's not exactly that noticeable. And it didn't feel that noticeable. There would have been some months that were more and some months that were less. And I know we can't, but weight loss is a big one, isn't it, for people? And for me, my skin was actually as well. And my skin broke out in month 3. You can't get disheartened. You have to keep going. I mean, I remember it was my, I was my 100 days. My skin broke out. And I was like, this isn't fair.
No, you, I was just going to say, like, it feels really unfair. And I had a friend of mine who decided to, he did a month without drinking, which is amazing. And I went to see him, and physically, you know, you could see like his transformation. And I can do this with this friend of mine, so I just know him really well. And I just immediately was like, what? Like, you've stopped drinking for 4 weeks and you look like that. And I'm like, it's like 8 months. And like, I only feel like I'm starting to, you know, really see the benefits of it. And it was just, that's on, you know, like it is so different for everybody. But I feel like this, you have to be patient and you have to have faith. And actually, you have to really not care about those external things because ultimately, you know, if you drank like I did, it was unsafe, it was unhealthy, you know, it was only going to bring. I mean, I look back now and I think, God, I've just been very lucky from a physical perspective that, you know, there so far, as far as I know, no lasting damage. You know, binge drinking is really dangerous. And it was more that I was just focusing on that. And also my mental health. Like my mental well-being, it was like even if nothing changes on the outside, you know, the difference on how I feel in my head has been unmeasurable, really, you know, and that actually is the biggest thing that makes me feel like I will never go back. And there are moments where I think, oh, that little glass of rosé in the sunshine looks quite nice, you know, like how can you not? And but it's the, you know, I mean, I'm petrified of having a hangover now, I'm not gonna lie, but it's not actually that that stops me from going there. It's like, why would you want to put your head back in that place? Because it was one of the worst places you've ever been. So like, you know, and then usually I'll ask myself, what actually is it do I need? If all of a sudden that alcohol's starting to look a bit shiny and inviting, there's probably something else that's going on. Like, why? Because I need to be soothed, right? So that's also the work that you have to look into, understanding why am I going there? And also, you know, when I think about cravings and triggers, since making that decision back in, you know, last year, I've been in a very different headspace with craving alcohol. I think before I'd actually finally woken up and had that mindset shift, I used to find myself getting triggered or having cravings a lot, whereas I really haven't had them that much. I always say now that really with alcohol, I feel similar to like if I pass a Krispy Kreme donut stand, like I'll kind of look at it and go, oh yeah, you know, I could probably always have a Krispy Kreme, but I'm not gonna because, you know, I know exactly why I wouldn't do that. All this, so it's that kind of level. I don't give it too much more importance. And then if I find myself wanting it again, I ask myself, well, what is it that I actually need? Whereas before I'd got to that place last year, you know, I almost saw those triggers or cravings as instructions, really, because I just hadn't done the work underneath it to be able to deal with them.
That is amazing. And that is the difference between seeing it as a thought that you've had based on habit, based on,
Yeah.
our brains are prediction machines looking at the environment and then scanning and going, oh, this looks familiar. They're just offerings, they're suggestions. Whereas you start to see the thoughts as instructions, well, of
Yeah.
course they're going to feel powerful. Of course they're going to feel like you have to fight them. But the best thing you did was that this is going to be the best thing ever. I almost get excited.
Yeah, it was very empowering, actually. I remember feeling that and then almost being a bit like, oh, this is weird. I don't normally feel like this, you know, on a day one. Like, what's happened here? And again, I think it was just naturally the just that work that I'd put in. Just this other suggestion came in because I'd been looking, you know, I'd opened myself up to all the positivity around what not drinking gives you rather than what it takes away. And I think that's another big mindset shift of I used to tell myself that my world would feel smaller if I didn't drink, or maybe I didn't tell myself that, but I felt that way because, you know, because it was a coping mechanism. And then last year, my world just opened up completely because I just was excited to try things sober. And that was a completely different shift. So I went to my first sober festival, and, you know, I couldn't, my thought process, instead of, I can't go to a festival without drinking. That's what I would have thought about going to a festival up until last summer. I cannot go to a festival without drinking. Like I used to think, I can't go to a wedding and not drink. I can't go to a Christmas party and not drink, like that. Whereas when I went to this festival, I was like, why would I want to spoil it by drinking? You know, and it was that everything just flipped on its head. And because I would have spoiled it by drinking, you know, and I might have, you know, there's a scale there, but somewhere I could have ended up, you know, doing something catastrophic and really ruined it for myself and my family, or I would have just ruined it for myself, which is kind of more likely what would have happened. But, you know, why would I want to do that? Getting through a festival because I've overdone it on the first night. You know, those sorts of things, that's just what my life was like for so long, really. And even if I didn't ruin it, I would still be annoyed that I had kind of probably put alcohol first somewhere around that weekend or night or day or whatever, and I would know, and that chips away at you over time.
Yeah, it chips away at your self-confidence and your self-esteem,
Totally.
doesn't it?
Yeah.
It is just the other thing that you've said there that's absolutely brilliant is that it's why would I go back to that headspace?
Yeah. I never want to
That
go.
headspace is painful. I mean, I've had conversations this week about would I just have one? Could I just have one? Right? Well, the answer to would I just have one is hell no.
Yeah.
Could I just have one? Probably. Like,
Yeah.
I very much expect that I would manage to moderate to begin with.
Yes.
And that's the key. So the answer is, I don't even want to open that door. I have no urge. I don't miss it. I don't like the taste. I've completely detached myself from it. It's not even a Krispy Kreme now, you know? I'm just completely detached from it. It's not part of my life. A thought may drift in, like when the weather changed, the sunshine, and it's like, oh, you would normally have a drink now.
Definitely. I think it's that's quite funny actually, because I remember this time last year, I did think, oh, I would, oh, look, the sun's out, there's a few people sitting outside, etc. And it did make me have those thoughts, but I haven't had them this time round. Not to say I won't as it gets a bit warmer, but you do start to notice that, like, you know, the Krispy Kreme kind of thoughts do get less and less, you know. And I think the first thing as well is that people have said to me, oh, do you think you'll have another drink? Oh, you think you'll have a drink again? And I will say, well, why? Like, I don't know why I would now. Like, because there's always been too much to lose. But I think I recognize it now. And you know, I don't know, why I would even go there. And that's because I don't need it. And I always needed alcohol, and it took me a long time to unpick that. And I understand that, like with many people, there's childhood trauma in my life. There's a lot of things that happened, and I used it to cope with that from a really young age. And so, you know, now I know that that is why I was using it. I don't need to go there again. And there's, you know, it's also a sneaky one, isn't there? Because I've had so many great nights out, and I've had so much fun. I always say, you know, it's fun until it's not. And there's been times of my life where it's been causing me more harm, and there's been times of my life where it's been less harmful. It's been a long old relationship where we've had some really, really challenging times around what drinking has kind of brought me. And then some other times where it's, you would say it's quite kind of quite fun, which is another reason why it's so dangerous, really. But I did always know that there was an underlying feeling that I was, you know, attached to using it in a way that was not healthy. So yeah, I don't think I would ever go back. And also, I was finding myself after big nights out, I would wake up feeling like I'd got away with it. Like, oh, got away with it. Or, wow, I was happy to go home. And like at the end of the night, that's unusual. Like, that's not normal. You know, that's not normal behavior. Like, waking up and feeling like, oh, phew, like nothing bad happened to me last night. And I probably lived like that. On and off, like not necessarily every single time, but I think that I probably felt like that for about 20 years.
Wow.
Time. Yeah.
Guys, no wonder you don't want to go back to that headspace.
No, I
So, what are your three benefits
Yes.
of sobriety? What's your first one?
Okay, so I thought this was actually really hard. I wrote them down to make sure I didn't forget them. And I think, like, firstly, I just have to say that you know, overall, I think stopping drinking has probably improved every single relationship that I have in my life, in one way or another, and not necessarily monumentally. I haven't done the steps. I haven't been like kind of going and making amends with people or things like that, because I don't work a program. But I just overall, it's improved. And then I also, these aren't my three, but I just had to mention them. Sorry. I have to just say health as well, in the fact that I just think, you know, you literally get years back of your life if you stop drinking. And so I didn't want those to be my three, but I just had to
You had to squeeze them.
mention them. Yeah, I had to squeeze them in. I'm sorry. But so the first one, like we've mentioned it, is joy.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky that when I was drinking before I was sober, like I had a lot of joy in my life. I've had a beautiful family, a beautiful daughter, amazing friends, and you know, I've done a lot of exciting things. But my in myself, within me, there wasn't as much joy as I have now. And like this joy is sometimes I feel like a child. Like I feel like a child. I mean, I speak to other people that are sober, we always laugh because like you know, that we just find like, oh my God, look at that sunset. I'm just going to take a photo of this sunset. Or like, we're all become obsessed with the moon. And like, or we just, everyone, like, I'm, you know, I'm okay being like a complete, I'm so into coffee now. Can I swear?
Yeah, if you want
All
to.
right, to say like, my people call me like I'm a coffee wanker now. So like, I've got a machine, I grind my own beans, and like, I go to bed like really excited about having a coffee in the morning, and like, can't wait to sit outside and be able to have that coffee first thing. And like, it's taken me a really long time to be able to listen to the birds in the morning and not be triggered by those nights that I would probably still be up from the night before. So now, when I get to sit and have my coffee and hear the bird song in the morning, I just adore it because it feels so wholesome and lovely, and my gratitude for those moments. And also, in that joy is dancing. So, like, I used to, big festival person, love, really going out dancing, drum and bass, and things like that. And I assumed that by stopping drinking, that I would have to cut off that area of my life. And finally, like this year, I absolutely love going to gigs and festivals and clubs and like everything, and dancing sober. And the first time I did that, I went to see Chase and Status last year. I just started crying outside because whilst I was dancing, because I couldn't believe that I got to experience that I loved completely sober, soaking it all up. And I'll dance anywhere now, which is really embarrassing for my daughter. But like, I used to think I had to drink alcohol to get on a dance floor. And now, if I love the music, I'll just get up and start dancing. So I'm just one of those people now.
That is so cool, though, because it was obviously something that to consider cutting it out of your life, dancing.
I mean, it used to be that I used to listen to kind of dance tracks and things like that, and I'd find them really triggering. So they would just, I had to stop listening to them. But then again, I wasn't ready. Like, I hadn't done the work I needed to do. So now I found like I've just fallen in love with music all over again. And that, that's just been so freeing, and it's brought me so much joy. And then a lot of the joy that I get as well is just from peace. Like we talked about, like things just being constant, and just, there's a real peace that I find in life now that I've never had in my life. And that is really, something to be so grateful for and never take for granted. So the joy in the small moments has just been phenomenal. So yeah.
So what's your second?
So my second one is confidence. And what I mean by confidence is not necessarily that I would get up and stand up and talk in a room of 200 people. Like, it's not that. It's more like just a quiet confidence in my ability, because I used to feel like a fraud. I used to have terrible imposter syndrome because my self-confidence was low. I had a lot of self-doubt. The way I spoke to myself was just horrendous, especially around my drinking. And actually, you could speak to probably all of my friends and they would say I'm one of the most confident people they know. But on the inside, I doubted myself with a lot. And I would go to work. I've a completely different life now. I've retrained into something that I absolutely adore doing, as a heart-led business where I work directly with people, supporting them as they have babies. But I used to have a corporate life, and I used to be in that corporate environment thinking I shouldn't be here. I'm not good enough. And I used to drink to cope with that. And then that used to make me feel like, well, that drinking persona that I have is like this other person. Sometimes almost living a double life. And then having, being sober has given me this kind of confidence in my ability, because I also feel like if I can do this, it's pretty much I can do anything, really. So I might not be able to do it the first time, but if you keep going, you'll be able to do it. And it's given me the confidence to problem solve. If something happens, I can deal with it. It might be hard, but I'm going to be able to deal with it. And going through all that work that it takes to get to a place where you've bettered yourself to the extent that I feel like I have has given me this confidence that there are probably many, many other things that I could put a hand to that I would be able to achieve. And I never thought that about myself before. And also the confidence to see myself a bit differently. I can get emotional now. When I was drinking, I didn't think I was a good mother. And
Oh.
now I think I'm a really excellent mother. So,
Oh, goodness,
yeah.
and guilt.
And the crazy thing was is that since my daughter has been born, I've drank the least I've ever drank in my entire life. So I didn't drink at home. The drinking wasn't around her. Like, I feel very happy to know that she will not have memory of me being drunk or, or hungover. I'd had far, I would say, heavier drinking periods in my life. And even when I was drinking like a couple of times a year, that was enough for me to say to myself, I wasn't good enough in the most important role of my life. So I think when I see and know and talk to people who are drinking daily or are really heavy into it, I really feel for them because I know how it was affecting me. And by the end, I was, I was still binge drinking, but just not as often. And it was still, my opinion of myself was so low because of it. So it's really insidious. So that having that confidence is, and I get things wrong all the time, and that is also okay. That's fine. And there's freedom in that, which is really powerful.
So, what's your third thing?
So my last one is just safety. To be the bluntest form of that is, I was a binge drinker, so the way I drank was unsafe because, I would drink far too much in a short period of time. And that's really not good on the body, it's not good on the mind. And then also when I drank to blackout, that was really, really unsafe. I could fall over, I could fall onto train tracks, like who knows? And actually, outwardly, I looked okay. And when you are in a blackout, you're just not able to make decisions that are the right decisions. And so that's the kind of bluntest form of it. But also, I feel really safe, like with the decisions that I'm going to make. I care about myself to not put myself in positions where I'll be unsafe. And also, my intuition, like, your intuition is usually pretty spot on. And if you're drinking, you just can't tap into it. You just can't, like, you're not connected. The whole point of drinking alcohol disconnects you from yourself. And once you're able to really be intuitive with yourself, then I feel safer. I feel safer in my own body. I feel safer in my own mind. And that also, I know I keep harping on about it, but for a long time, I didn't care enough about myself to care if I was safe or not. And that was another reason why I was able to keep going back and drinking, the way I did. Or a lot of my drinking was just tied up in partying. So it wasn't like I was kind of getting up and being like, oh, I feel like this. I'm going to go and sit down and drink lots of alcohol now. It was, tied up in social situations and things like that. But ultimately, I never stopped to say, like, why are you doing this to yourself? It was all like, I need to do this because I needed to get out of myself, really. Whereas I don't feel that now. I feel like I am a safe space for me to be in. And being is going to get emotional again, less. And not drinking has allowed me to feel that safety. And that impacts my daughter, that impacts my husband, my family, everybody. But the biggest person it impacts is me. And I think that's another thing to really mention is that I tried to say, like, I'm not going to drink like this again for my daughter. I'm going to try not to drink like this again for my health. I'm going to try. And actually, like, it you cannot do it for any other reason than just actually having enough self-worth. And I had to work on that self-worth, unfortunately, whilst I was drinking. And then I finally got to the point where my self-worth overtook my drinking. Some people can't do it that way around. They need to put the drink down and then work on their self-worth afterwards. And that's fine. But almost everybody I meet has had to do some work on how they feel about themselves in one way or another for them to successfully be able to get to a positive place without alcohol in their lives. And it looks different for everybody. But when I got there, I think that was another reason why I was able to finally click it into place and not look back.
You can't shame yourself. You have to change.
I've had way too much of that in my life. I still have it. I don't think I'm ever going to get to a point where there won't be a moment or two where I will, there'll be shame attached to me in some way or another, I think always, but it's getting less and less and less. And I don't let it define me now like I used to. I used to give myself a very hard time. And now when I look at my drinking or decisions that I made, because of my drinking or how things ended up, I actually just want to go back and give myself a hug. I didn't know better. I didn't have the tools. I wasn't able to do the work. It was really painful doing the work. Like it was hard going through the therapy I went through and addressing things that I needed to address. And like that was really difficult. And so I don't look back and chastise myself for not doing it sooner, not being able to do it, continuing to drink. I just want to hug myself and say you did the best you could at the time, and now you're here, and that's you've done it. But that also takes work. You never stop doing the work, do you?
No.
Sometimes it's tiring doing more work.
But how much more work is there to do?
I know, like
Doesn't
it's just
work.
never ending. Like, can it finish now, please? But life doesn't work like that, does it? And it is
No, it
worth
doesn't.
it. But sometimes you think, can I just have a break? Like,
The best thing to notice is if you're triggered by anything, it's like not necessarily triggered to drink, but just triggered. If you feel like irritated by something or annoyed by something, or oh, why is that? What can I always think, oh, brilliant, another growth opportunity.
curious. Yeah, it's about getting curious about it. And I think that's a really lovely word, because I used to say, like, why don't you just try going to a wedding sober, and if you don't like it, drink at the next one.
Yeah.
And like when there was times that I would be really struggling, it's somebody's birthday and it's going to be a really boozy day, and like I'm going to be doing this, and I like, well, just try it, and but try the whole day. And then if you genuinely thought it would have been better if you got yourself into a drunken mess, like then you can do that the next time. And of course, I never felt like it was the drinking version of the day would be a better day. So I think curiosity is a great word to use around it, because you can say, just try it. Like, just what might it feel like? And I used a bit of that as well with the festival that I did. Like, what is it going to feel like going to a festival sober? Like, you've never done it. Like, it's amazing. And actually, there's loads of great food there. There's loads of stuff to do. Like, it was so good. Like, I just, again, it's opening it up. And if you feel curious rather than apprehensive, that's quite a nice mindset shift as well.
Yeah, it is. I've just written an article on that actually,
Have you?
on using
Oh,
curiosity. Yeah, and the
amazing.
word curious. If we become curious in life, I mean, you
Yeah.
can't be closed-minded and curious at the same time.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
so, actually, just bringing that element of curiosity to it is one of my favorite buzzwords, as is getting excited.
Yeah.
Because
Yeah.
this is an opportunity. It may be sort of badged up as a negative choice. You sort of, when you first think about going sober, you think nobody ever sits there and goes, I would like to stop drinking and I would like to go sober as part of my life plan. But when it comes about, it actually is a fantastic opportunity. We've never done so many things without drinking, without a drink in our hand.
Yeah. And like every single one for me has been better. It's difficult, it's hard, because for some people, it's really tricky to try and navigate a sober life around lots of people that are drinking, for example. I don't have that. I've had some amazing support. Like, I've just got the most amazing friends that have just been, by my side the whole way, never chastised me when I was back to the day one. My husband has been incredible, really only there to support. Could totally see, probably more clearly than me at the time, the reasons why I was reaching for it and those sorts of things. But I know for some people, it must be more difficult to get excited. It must be harder to be curious because they haven't kind of got that space. So it's about just kind of making it like a little bit smaller. I think those kind of huge declarations of I'm never going to drink again, or I can't drink, or these again, it's the curiosity doesn't have to be huge. It can just be really small. I'm just going to go for a walk every day. really early in the morning, so I'm not going to drink the night before, and let's see how that feels. It can just be, you know, everyone's on a different scale, aren't they, of what they need to do. But curiosity makes it accessible for everybody because it will look different for everybody. And finding excitement in those small moments is the joy, basically. And then you'll start to feel that joy. And I just know so many sober people that say that word has just arrived into their life just by doing one thing, and that is by not drinking alcohol anymore. You know, just one thing. But if it was, you know, makes it sound super easy, which it isn't, but it's
It's
worth
worth it.
it.
Something that you said there, feeling safe in yourself. Wow.
I didn't understand what that meant for a really long time until I felt it. And then, yeah, that's just been a game changer. And you were a massive part of me starting out getting sober. I followed you for a really long time, you know, lurking around and watching what you were doing, for I was quite there. And then I started listening to your socializing sober and really found that that helped, that hypnosis track helped for me. You were so honest about everything I related, even though our stories were kind of different. I think the way that we drank was different. But there were so many things that you said that I've just related to, which gave me, like, you know, you showed me a clear path. And I think that's so important because, like we spoke about at the beginning, about it will click, it will click, it will click, just to see it happening for people. You know, you can't pretend that it's not achievable. So the fact that you do that, you put that out there, you know, is helping so many people, and it helped me personally. So just thank you so much. And it's just, you know, been a delight that you asked me to come and chat to you today. It's the first time I've ever spoken about being sober in this way. So thank you so much.
You've done it brilliantly. I am so pleased to have played a small part in any of it. That is amazing. Thank you so much for your time and coming on here.
Welcome.
You've got me emotional now.
Oh, that's the other thing. It
Lovely to know that me starting, a couple of years ago and posting on Instagram has actually created something.
you know, there'll be so many people that get so much comfort and the hope and direction that you'll never even know about. I think that's the other thing. You know, people are just there watching and soaking it up. And even I, you know, I have a very I keep my sober Instagram private. I'm not completely out there in that sense because, well, for, you know, for obviously I really wanted to just keep it somewhere that I could just feel like it was just for me. But, you know, I post things and every now and again I'll get somebody saying, like, thank you for this. Like, I needed to see this today. And I think I just do it for myself, really, and my few like sober friends that I've got on there. And I think, oh God, wow, you know, like it is. The internet can be a very nasty place, but there is an incredible pocket of it
Yeah.
full of sober or sober curious or people trying to get sober. And it is one of the most positive, delightful places I have ever had the pleasure of spending my time. So I would say if anybody is wanting support, and you know, a group of people that strangers that will be cheering and screaming for you every time you post on day one, day two, day three, like it's all there, isn't it? And it's been so vital for me. I wouldn't have come across you. There's a few other people that have been really pivotal, and it's free. It's free and it's so accessible and it's just wonderful. So you know, to have something like this come about, it's just lovely. So thanks again.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you'd like any support with your sobriety, then please reach out. You can visit my website, louisaevans.com, where you'll be able to send me a message, and you can look at some of the things I've put together to help you. There are links to my Dry January podcast, my audiobook on Audible. As a clinical hypnotherapist, as well as a therapist, I have created lots of different hypnotherapy recordings that you can listen to help you on any subject. You'll find those on the website too, alongside my Sober Resilience course. As a listener of the show, you can use the code SOBERREBEL to buy one, get one free on any hypnosis or relaxation recording. I really hope you enjoyed this show as much as I enjoyed recording it. Have a great day. Until next time.